Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Secrets of Galarian. I'm Jessica Price, Paizo's project manager.
Podcast manager, awesome.
John, don't say new job titles out loud, we'll have to do it.
Thirsty. Right, so, I'm John Compton, I'm the organized play lead developer, so Pathfinder Society, Starfinder Society, that sort of thing.
I crashed the panel. I'm James Jacobs, I'm the Pathfinder creative director.
So we're here to answer questions and or misdirect questions and give you as much information as we can about the setting. But this is being steered by you, so questions.
Go for it.
Okay. Awesome. Something that's been bugging me.
Yeah.
In the inner sea, just above the Stormhold Plateau is the lake with the big island in the middle where the rocks are thrown at anyone that approaches too closely.
There's actually a module that takes place there.
You're thinking
Lincoln Carthen. Oh, I know what you're thinking about Charak's tomb.
Yeah.
Oh.
So,
okay.
That's actually the first thing we ever said about Galarian. Mm-hmm. Back in the very, very dawn of time, mm-hmm. when we first announced Pathfinder, I think the very first blog post we did about Galarian was basically, welcome to Pathfinder. This is a new setting, and to prove the fact that we have like world content, I wrote a blog post about Charak's tomb, which is basically this island in the middle of a lake in the Starville Plateau that is basically a tomb, a hill giant king's tomb, and this was a hill giant from before Thassalon, like pre Thassalon even times, or during Thassalon, where this hill giants had a much more high society than big oversized hillbillies, which is kind of what they are now. And so Charak was this powerful hill giant, and they buried him in this tomb to honor him, and the idea kind of was that this was the Tomb of Horrors, but it was giant-sized. So rather than have like a giant like demon maw that you crawl in and annihilate yourself, you can ride an elephant in and annihilate the elephant while you're riding it. And so everything was big, huge. And the things on the island around it that are throwing rocks to keep you off are... the idea there was that they're basically haunted by hill giant ghosts, and what would be more fun for a hill giant ghost to do than telekinesis for boulders and boats trying to come towards you? So that's basically what's going on there. It's something that I had always thought that we would go back to and explore again, and now it's the 10th year of Paizo's PaizoCon, and I've been at Paizo for 14 years or whatever it is, 15, 19, 200, and we still haven't gone back there yet, but we might someday. I know what's going on there, but anyway. So yeah, go back to the blog and like search for blog post number one. So now I will accept questions on blog post number two.
What is blog post number two?
I think that's when we talked about Valoris.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there a timeline where you can see where the adventures keep happening? Because I know a lot of adventures keep on happening at Sandpoint at various different times. It seems like it. Is there like a timeline what adventures happen where?
By and large, adventures tend to happen in the corresponding year when we publish them. So, like, when we did Reign of Winter, it was timed exactly for when Baba Yaga was supposed to come back to Irisin to replace her daughter with a new ruler.
Yeah.
So, if you just look at the publication date, and you find the corresponding 47XX year.
So, 2015, or in that case,
it would be 4715,
yeah.
When
yeah.
that adventure is kind of assumed to take place. But again, you can make whatever adjustments.
I just started playing Pathfinder, so I was like, what the hell? What happened when? And I was just kind of confused.
There's not a central consolidated timeline that says, you know, this module happened in this particular year, and that gives you details about what's changed. Because for the most part, I mean, and we've softened this rule a little bit, like with the Adventurer's Guide that just came out, the organizations in there put in a timeline that says, you know, this module happened in this particular year, and that gives you details about what's changed. Because for the most part, I mean, and we've softened this rule a little bit, like with the Adventurer's Guide that just came out, the organizations in there reflect changes and developments that have happened in the APs, but that's kind of an exception. In general, our campaign settings and stuff don't get affected by what happens in the adventure path. So.
Something else that we tend to do, if there's a certain area that intrigues you, if we've done a follow-up book on the region, for example, we did a campaign setting book for Osirian about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and we looked at all of the adventures that we had published in Osirian, and we started to incorporate some of those into the timeline so that we could cover what's happened in the past 6 or 7 years. So we tend to do that.
I dream of having like a Galarian like broadsheet each year that's just like, here's what's changed, but I'm not putting additional products on the schedule, so.
But you could.
But I am.
Yeah, it's one of the hard things about being a PM who also has done creative and does creative for Paizo sort of on the side is a lot of times those two things are in direct conflict. It's like, but we could do a hardcover on the... Oh, no.
But Jessica, we could do a 256-page Kadira book.
On the Hellish Empire. I hate you.
That is one of the other secrets of Glary. My hatred is real.
I would call that their secret.
Certainly not anymore. All right, are there questions?
Oh, come on. You guys all came to a panel called Good.
I have a friend who was wondering, he wasn't able to make it, but he wanted to know, are we ever going to find out what happened to the Archmage Nex and Old Man Jedebe?
Yes. So, Archmage Nex is kind of Eric's pet, and we want to know too, so we've been pestering him for information.
I've gotten him to the point of writing an outline.
That's no guarantee, but at least now.
We said a bit more about Old Mage Jedebe, and anything we can do to help you get him to do that outline, just. Shame is good.
One of the things that's nice about Old Mage Jotembe is that he has several generations of legacy as well, because you have the 10 magic warriors, then after Jotembe sort of faded from history or disappeared or what have you, they continued to do their own acts of good throughout the Mwangi expanse and beyond. And then you have the entire Magambia structure from there, teaching the magic of Jotembe, blending arcane and bits of druidic magic together. So you can look at it from several different levels, and there are lots of different options for how you might, in an adventure, start to unravel.
Pressure is something
to say. The Magambia is the group that I forgot to mention in the previous one. I was going through the 16 adventure path, and I think this is hell next twice. Anyway, adventure path, the adventurer's guide has a section on the Magambia. There's some information about old Jotembe, along with a bunch of like just player options.
What happened to Chad Razmir's college roommate?
He was eaten by a beast in the Isle of Terror.
He vastly underestimated the challenge rating, the average challenge rating to the creatures that were going to be on the Isle of Terror. So he went in thinking that it was going to be appropriate for fifth level adventurers, and it was full of night machines. So,
okay.
Surprise.
It was not a dare.
How, if at all, the novels or the comic book storylines have or will affect the RPG products?
Let's see. So, I'm a lot more familiar with the Pathfinder Tales. When we're looking at the RPG line, up until recently, it has been mostly setting agnostic. And with Adventurer's Guide, with Book of the Damned, we're starting to blend that a little bit more. So I think that the Pathfinder Tales can serve as inspiration to draw upon for some of those things, but we have so many different ideas and loose threads and organizations that we can draw upon that usually what the Pathfinder Tales, at least for speaking from an organized play perspective, usually I like to just look at the tales as inspiration for how we can continue adventures in those same areas, and sometimes what NPCs we might run into, of course.
It depends. One of the great things about working at Paizo is you get a free copy of every product we make. One of the terrible things about working at Paizo is we put out so many pages per month, and we're all really busy, which means that most of us have a stack of the products we've gotten for the past 8 months that we're like slowly working our way down, and you know, we maybe get 64 pages read every month, And every month, Paizo puts out somewhere between 200 and 1,200 additional pages of content, so all that happens is that backlog just grows perpetually. But, you know, we do. Some of us are more diligent than others, and so if you have somebody on staff who's read a Pathfinder Tales novel and, like, really liked it, the chance of that influencing a product is bigger. Like, I know that a lot of us on staff really like Leanne Marcial's Nightglass, which takes place in Adal. Chances are, if we do an Adal book, that book is going to heavily influence it, because we all, you know, read it, and we're like, oh, yes, like, this is really atmospheric and moody, and, like, really gives a sense of what it's like to live in Adal. So it's kind of by, like, staff member preference, and if we've had time to read stuff, and just,
I can say this, a project that I am currently working on that has not yet been announced, but I think will be announced at Gen Con, I've read a Pathfinder Tales novel to make sure that the events of that dovetail in correctly. So the answer is yes. I'm not going to tell you which one.
Because that will give me a hint whether that one.
And I'm not going to say it's one we've even published.
See the events of the upcoming Tal'Dorei AP having a ripple effect through Galarion, and would you be maybe rewriting things or changing things based on that?
From an organized play perspective, I can tell you that when Crystal and I were working together to pitch this in the first place, we were looking at an integrated crossover between the adventure path and what the organized play program could bring to tell the story from multiple angles. So already, it is crossing product lines. As for exactly how it updates our world, in part it's the standard marching orders of, hey, an adventure path happens and the continuity may or may not be integrated because we're trying to make sure that you can play APs in any order. Every once in a while we have adventure paths that build off of one another. For example, Shattered Star assumes the first two or three adventure paths have already happened. Mm-hmm. So we sometimes have to do that and spring forward the timeline or the assumptions of what the fallout was just to continue producing more adventures and continue the story. So going forward with Tal'Dorei stories, we'll probably be borrowing a fair amount on what we expect or how we expect that adventure path to have concluded.
Yeah, and you'll note that in a lot of the adventure paths, we generally don't go back to places we've already done stuff. When we do, we do assume that the previous events have some sort of effects. I mean, you mentioned Shattered Star assumes Riz the Rune Lord's Curse of the Crimson Throne and Second Darkness have taken place. Jade Regent also assumes that those have taken place because that happens after Rise of the Rune Lords. Hell's Rebels and Hell's Vengeance happen concurrently. If we do, we do War of the Crown, we are in control of how that story comes out. We decide what we basically want to happen to Tal'Dorei is the implications of this adventure path. If we do in the future another adventure path set in Tal'Dorei, we'll have to decide at that point if we want to set it in like some bizarro parallel universe where those events didn't happen. I doubt we will. I think we'll probably incorporate those events in.
The fascinating thing about Tal'Dorei is it's so central to our setting, and yet we have not actually defined it that clearly. It's one of those things, it's this weird, like, I think in our heads, we all believe it's fairly well-defined, and then we go to actually look at how much printed material have we published about this, how many, like, very specific things have we said about how it works. It's like, oh, there's barely anything. So I think, like, we have sort of a collective institutional headcanon about Tal'Dorei that we frequently forget has not actually been published. So it's not so much that the events of the Tal'Dorei adventure path and the related campaign setting are going to redefine Tal'Dorei as they're actually going to be defining it. So, and then once that's out, that is going to be the bulk of our written canon on Tal'Dorei. So I think anything that comes after that is, you know, purely by necessity going to have to be based on it. So.
And that headcanon concept kind of bites us every once in a while, because we can live in this moment. Like in Paizo, we can discuss, oh yeah, we're totally going to move forward in this direction with this thing, and we talk about this for months or even years, and then we forget we haven't written it yet. And so we're like, oh yeah, didn't you hear that this person died? Like, hasn't that person been dead for long? And then suddenly all the fans are like, no? You're doing what? Like,
walk through this door, reset your memory.
Yeah.
Or it's even even like, we're like, oh yeah, that person died, and then the fans are like, who's that person?
Oh, you'll learn to care about them soon enough.
Walk through that door.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to go in more into Geb in the future?
Yes.
So, from an adventure standpoint, Geb can be a tricky place to adventure, in part because it is so full of things that adventurers, especially good line adventurers, so traditionally want to punch in the head. And that can get you in trouble when those are citizens. So, one thing that has really intrigued me for Geb is the different media for adventures that we have, because we have Pathfinder Society scenarios, we have modules, we have adventure paths. But we also have other formats like the adventure card game or the organized play. So we can use any number of those things to explore what would be a really tricky location and start to show more about it through any number of those paths. But so there are plans.
Okay, cool.
There are people on staff who care intensely about Geb, so
that's good to hear.
The chances are also more likely sooner in the timeline.
I wonder if one of them is sitting on this panel.
Sometimes
crash this panel.
Sometimes passionate people, when you ask them a direct question, will hiss and say, "I'm a bloodlord," and leave the room. So our passion can be excuses for any number of things.
Following on that question, are we ever going to see any more of Arcadia?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait and find out.
Yeah. When we see on the message boards and speaking with our fans that something is really, really popular, it helps to ignite sort of a creative itch in us to make that happen because we're also excited about seeing it. So when we see you want to see something, that we're happy about it. So to reiterate answer, yeah.
Again, it's kind of the same thought process, the Dragon Empire, any adventure paths or anything of that nature going to be evolving from that area. It's kind of been a long time since I've seen anything from that. I'm just curious.
So a lot of the reason Tien Cha is in there is because we had... I mean, the short answer again, obviously, is yes. The stuff that we want to do with... I've always been sort of hoping to do another big adventure path set. I would like to do something set in regions around Goka or Shenmen. Which are two areas that I'm really, really pretty interested in. Or the Watchman Jungle, of course, because that's where Kaiju live. or Yige, or there's an entire campaign setting there that we've barely even touched. Nothing announced yet, but...
Speaking to somebody who works entirely in digital products, have you been looking at our digital products?
That's true. We've done a lot of scenario set in Tien Cha.
At this point, we've probably done something like 20 different scenarios set in Tien Cha over a wide variety of levels. So just in the past like 8 months alone, you have 802, Worn Asunder, in which you set off from Ramprasad into the Kulan Day Mountains and deal with a Tungma ancient hero. You have 813, What Sleeps in Stone, which follows up on that same plot line, tier 7 to 11. And one of my favorites of them all, we recently did a quest pack, a series of 5 1-hour adventures that integrate into a full story. So if you just want to run back to back, go nuts. that is set in the what you might call like the successor state basin, you know, where the 3 clashing triplets of Po Li, Quen, and Ling Shen have been fighting over who gets to be the new Lung Hua. And then you have Shakuro off to the side being like, please nobody invade us as a tool in your succession quest. And the PCs get to be agents of one of the folk heroes of Shakuro's rebellion to find a relic that will help to lend political clout in ensuring Shakuro's continued freedom.
Played that yesterday.
And
loved it. It was fun. Yeah.
So, Pathfinder Society continues to be an outlet for Tien Cha and Tien adventures. And usually, when I go into planning a season, I try to make sure there are at least 2 or 3 of those adventures because we want to continue those storylines.
Good answer.
I think you had your hand up.
What about anything for Jalmaray soon?
Adventurer's Guide has Jalmaray stuff in it. The Houses of Perfection are one of the factions in there.
We want to do more with it. It's not currently announced, but I think you can be fairly confident that there will be more in Jalmaray.
And you should play 6-08, the Sea Gang Expedition. A delightful pulp tiger hunt along with Elkin Star nobles.
I think you were next.
Yeah, I was curious with Starfinder being released, is there going to be any sort of like tie back to the Iron Gods adventure path?
Yes. So to provide some very vague response beyond that, is that Starfinder is flavored by Pathfinder. It's informed by what existed in Pathfinder. And so some things we have pulled forward, some things we have let sort of fade into more obscurity, and to make a great and fun setting. So the more that you know the Pathfinder setting, the more you'll look and see little nuggets in Starfinder and say, oh, awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Similar to the question I had before about novels and comics, what about the Pathfinder study scenarios? How they have influenced the RPG Galarian products, or have they?
Or the setting in general?
Yeah.
The dialogue between all of my colleagues and I is really great. And whenever we're doing a new campaign setting, then there's a lot of question asking of, okay, what has the Pathfinder Society organized play program done with this over the past 9 years? Oh, okay, let's talk about how we might incorporate that or have that inform the background of whatever we're doing going forward. Just a while ago, James came by and asked me, tell me everything about X that the Pathfinder Society has done. And we were able to get that into some of the outline.
I know when I did Kadira, I did a PDF search for Kadira and Kalesh and related terms, and then was like, oh wow, most of the information that we have given about this country has been in PFS. So we do, there's always a sort of fluid relationship because, Pathfinder Society has seasons in which storylines happen and evolve, and I think sometimes it's a little more fluid than you can have the campaign setting be, but we at least always research it, talk to John, find out like what's happened in this area that we should be aware of, and also like what do you guys need from us if you're going to do stuff in the future in these countries? Like, what do you need to know from us? What needs to be in this campaign setting? I sat down with a copy of Kadira and I was like, this is a thing that if we do any more of it, I want you to check with me because like it's a personal thing versus like these paragraphs about random things that I put in there, like, go nuts! They're yours! So, it's a continuing dialogue.
So I've forgotten all the proper names, but the island up in the north with the dragon running the breeding experiment?
Hermea.
Okay, has that been explored further and I missed
it?
Or
so Hermea is...
The short answer is always yes, I understand.
So, the thing that causes the most bloody fights on our message boards is alignment debates, and the thing that causes the most bloody fights internally at Paizo is alignment debates, and since Hermea was, largely James Sutter trolling the alignment system in a way,
if you want another taste of Hermea, I recommend picking up... I recommend picking up Pathfinder campaign setting Intersea Bestiary. I wrote the introduction for that one, in which it is written by a third-generation Hermaean scholar who is looking at all of the species that show up in Intersea Bestiary and giving a rather conceited, insular Hermaean view and analysis of their particular virtues. So, should be an amusing read.
But anyway, no, you're not getting a Hermea campaign setting anytime soon because not all of the staff would survive it. Yes?
Will there be more stuff on the dragon gods, like Aptu, dare I say it, Tiamat, which is only mentioned a little here and there?
We've got Dayhawk and Aptu sections in Intersea Fates. So I don't know if you saw that. Tiamat is something that we're not going to be doing much with anymore, because when people think of Tiamat, Tiamat is certainly from real world mythology, but when you come at Tiamat in a fantasy tabletop RPG, you think of the five-headed dragon from D&D. And that specific incarnation and that manifestation of Tiamat is the intellectual property of Wizards of the Coast. That's not open content. We can't do that unless we want to get sued, and it's just not an option for us to explore. At the same point, Tiamat's really rad. That's a five-headed dragon with a poison stinger that lives in hell. I mean, you can't get a much more awesome than that. And
pretty metal.
Yeah, it's pretty metal. So I'm not interested in saying, and if you play Pathfinder, Tiamat is anything else, really, you know? I would rather not say anything about Tiamat than have every GM out there who wants to have Tiamat stuff in their game do whatever they want. Use all the information from Wizards. I've got a picture of Tiamat by Wayne Reynolds hanging on my wall at home. So I don't want to invalidate my art that I have decorating my house. Go wild with Tiamat in your games. We're not going to talk about her in our games. We're going to go with Dayhawk, who, as it turns out, is from the same real-world mythology that Tiamat is from. So if you want, just find replace the word Dayhawk with Tiamat in your setting and your run, your off run.
Okay. There's always things going on with the gods, like Manticula is getting ready to make a move on the Majestude, Verazma freaking hates her Gothma. Are there any, like, could any of those serve as potential backdrops for future adventure paths?
Yeah.
Sure.
That's a big yes.
We draw upon all sorts of inspirations within the setting for our stories. So sometimes the right thing for an adventure path, for example, is, hey, you know, there's going to be a different ruler. Or sometimes it's, wow, we sure did name drop this thing and say that it was on a 12-year timer and. So sometimes we do that too. And, you know, like divine conflicts or divine transformation sort of storylines, those are great, especially so long as you can get the PCs and the heroes involved in whatever that process is to make it happen. So, yeah, sure.
It's a delicate balance, though, because when you have beings of unimaginable power, you know, if you have an omnipotent being and an omnipotent being who are in conflict, it's probably a stalemate, and it may be a stalemate that, like, just destroys the planets. It may be, you know, so kind of one of the unspoken, I think, assumptions is that there are checks and balances on all the gods' powers. You know, so, like, Rovagug is imprisoned because a bunch of other gods got together and decided, like, we want to imprison this guy. We are going to join together to make sure that that happens. But, you know, when it's just a conflict between two different deities, I think it tends to play out through, mortal pawns, or rather than just going head-to-head.
Specifically with Nocticula and that type of stuff, the Book of the Damned is coming out in September. We're talking about that in another panel tomorrow morning. There's a lot of interpersonal, like, conflicts between devils and demons and daemons and chitin demagogues and Sockhill tormentors and all sorts of stuff in that book that really, it doesn't really set plots forward, but it does set advancements forward of storylines and stuff like that, so you'll really want to check that out. And we've done this plot, I mean, Wrath of the Righteous is this exact adventure path, where it's deities messing with deities and the repercussions on Galarian, so we've done it before, we'll do it again, I'm sure.
Okay. Everybody who had a question, put your hand back up because we've forgotten, and I just want to make sure there's somebody's been sitting there.
I don't think he's asked one yet.
Thank you. For each of you, what is the mystery you are most eager for the right time to explore to come? Without telling us the answer, obviously, because I assume it's not the right time.
See, there are, like, regions and places I really want to explore before I even start touching on mysteries. Like, when we talk about passion projects or being champions of certain places, it's, like, in the previous panel we talked about how Path of the Hell Knight, a passion project for Wes, because he knows Hell Knights, he loves Hell Knights, so he made that thing. For me, I love the nature of our timeline and the history of Galarian. I'd love to explore some of that. But The first real flag that I got to plant in Galarian was, or elaborate on, was adopting Ibalidos. So I would love to explore that more and be able to show off what I have in store for it.
Who Zonkathon was and why he changed. That's something that I figured out, and I'm looking for the right time to reveal that. There's a couple of other things that I'm really eager and excited to reveal the secrets are, but I can't tell you what they are because it's not Gen Con yet, and that's when we're announcing stuff.
You know, sort of like John, I've carved off my little piece of the world, and for me, like, one of the reasons I was interested in Kadira and one of the central sort of problems I had to get around in figuring out how it works was, why does our sort of most standard good goddess want a sort of theocratic empire? Generally speaking, nice people do not raise empires. You have to do a lot of stuff that is probably not God G in its alignment to create an empire. So, like, why? You know? And I do know the answer, and I'm hoping to get a chance to reveal it, but, you know, that for me was something I had to spend a lot of time, you know, and I spent a lot of time, like, researching ancient Persia, which was probably the most humane of ancient empires, and even they did a ton of terrible, terrible things, and so trying to figure out just, like, is there a way that I can build this and have this group come to power that doesn't just involve slaughtering everybody with their armies. So, figured out some reasons for that. Eager to talk about them.
When you finish working on your time machine, I want one of your first projects to be to go back and fix that problem from the beginning, because that's one of the things that I personally been pretty frustrated about. The Saren Rae is from my campaign setting, and she's always been the goddess of good and peace and redemption and healing, and she's nice. She's the friendliest, nicest deity in the setting. And when we did Galarian, and a lot of my, I basically transported a lot of my homebrew stuff into Kaizo's custody and care, I wasn't able to micromanage it all because it's a bigger thing than one person can do. And it's always frustrated me that Saren Rae has kind of been taken in a direction that I think is just, it's inappropriate, and it wasn't the right direction for her, and it's gotten in the print, and it's been the cause of a lot of, like, arguments I've gotten online with people, so I'm super, 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 super thankful that you're out there fixing it. So
I think that probably my headcanon for Saren Rae is a little bit different than yours, even, mm-hmm. because, like, in my headcanon, she's good, and she is kind, but she's also the goddess that has sort of a cutoff point, which is, like, you know, her philosophy is sort of, like, if you have a dog that bites people because it's been abused, you work with it, you try and heal it. If you have a dog that bites people because it has rabies, it's not fixable, like, you kill it as quickly as possible, so,
yeah,
like...
That's my Grover guy.
Yeah, so,
exactly.
I mean, she's got the, you know, she's got the kindness, she's got the healing, she's got the, like, she will try and work with you and she will try and bring you back to good, but she's also got the, like, virus cleansing, and after a certain point, you just... get rid of the
sun.
Evil as soon as you can. I think you're first.
Me?
Yeah.
Is there a piece of headcanon, like, this is for all, like, just, like, it's probably never going to go into print, it's like, Razmir has blue eyes to, like, the sun is made of green cheese kind of thing, that, like, is just minor and funny and you have?
Wangs have 7 genders. All of which are involved in reproduction. Do any of you know the Arabic chat alphabet? Okay, well, so there's sounds that don't exist in English, and so the numerals 1 through 7, they use those sounds, or they use those figures to represent some sounds that they don't have in English. So the name of each of the genders, 1 through 7, contains that sound, and it is indicated with that numeral. There's an email chain between Lindsay Palmer, John, Mark Seifter, and me, in which we work out how all 7 genders are involved in the reproduction process, and what they're called, how you pronounce each of them, and it's never
going to
get into print.
That's your thing. Can I be on that chain?
What was that race score?
The Wangs.
The Wangs.
The, like, shadow puppet Indonesian Shadow Puppet inspired creatures.
That was a recent PFS scenario too.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say that this all came about because Wang sounds a little bit like Wang.
There's a non-denial denial of error.
I was almost a lawyer, so.
I mean.
Next question, then.
I guess one thing that I guess we'll probably never get into print is that Amiko has a kobold samurai buddy.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I feel it. That's cool.
Alright.
Funny that you mentioned Amiko, somebody that's appeared in a bunch of adventure paths. I know she's been used in a couple of other adventure paths as well, kind of also based around Sandpoint. Has there been plans for Shelelu? I think that's how her name's pronounced. Because I think she's appeared in, what, three, four?
She was in Burnt Offering. She showed up in Second Darkness, and then she had a big role in Jade Regent.
Yeah. And even showed up in Pathfinder Comics.
Yeah, she showed up in Pathfinder. Yeah.
Oh.
She's one of the very first. I mean, everybody in Burnt Offerings, a lot of those characters have gone on to become pretty recognizable characters simply by dint of being around long enough. So, I have not finished going on about Sandpoint and people that live in Sandpoint, and I don't know if I ever will. So, yeah, there is going to be more stuff about them at some point.
There's somebody over here.
Shalila has yellow hair, not green hair.
Will we ever see Torch in anything else ever again?
You mean Grandmaster Torch?
Yes.
Hell yeah. Awesome. let me bring up something. It's been a little while since he's last appeared in a Pathfinder Society role-playing guild question. Or context. But did you know that he just showed up recently in Pathfinder Society Adventure Card Guild? You should play Season of Plundered Tombs. We had a really fun group of writers on that one, and I got to write a couple of adventures and sure did bring in some continuity for not only Grandmaster Torch, but the Scarab Sages faction. So the more that you want to learn about factions and some of your most reviled enemies and or secret allies that you really wish that would bring back the Shadow Lodge, you should really play those things. Oh, no, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Again, kind of a touchback with the whole mystery thing. First, for me, a big question with my group, and just because we make fun of it a lot, is you see a natural disaster, and you see a cleric come along, and it's Cleric of Grotus, and he's like, oh great, a cleric to help us. It's like, no, I'm just here to watch, because it's a disaster. and with that theme of that god, are there any plans to use him like as a focus, because he is, well, the god of the end times, and also he's there to watch for disasters. He's also floating in for Asmodee Realm too, just kind of sitting there.
There's a really long, complicated answer having to do with how our cosmology works. That I'm not sure how much of it is supposed to be secret, so I'm not going to get it.
I think there's a fair bit which has not been shared.
And I think it would take like 2 hours to explain.
And your head would explode.
My head would probably explode. Yeah, I mean, like, I added a little bit to it, and Wes was like, I'm not sure that we can print that. Don't scare the straits. probably not. Galarian probably will end at some point. I mean, in some ways, it's written into the cosmology of just the way the universe works, is that, you know, planets don't endure forever. Maybe even realities don't endure forever. But, you know, given that we haven't really set a countdown clock or anything.
Starfinder?
Galarian is not gone. It's just missing from its source. Uh-huh.
It's also worth noting that we have several different deities of different versions of end time and or catastrophe. Lady Nanbil in Tian Sha is sort of a catastrophe goddess. Rovagog is sort of a catastrophe god.
Oh, yeah.
Rotus, Xyphus when it comes to accidents happening. All sorts of different figures. So when it comes to like, we love including these different catastrophe deities, sure, but which one we bring into a given adventure or given campaign setting book really depends on the brand or variety of catastrophe that we're looking at. I can tell you that a cleric of Grotus recently featured in the Strange Dan's Adventure Path. So you can have fun with that.
I can also tell you that I am relatively sure that before the end of the year, I will probably be ordering at least one piece of art that has Grotius in the illustration. Maybe. I might change my mind.
That'd be something weird having in your house.
Yeah. Any plans to write any other mega dungeons, perhaps getting on with the Dungeon of Glorian?
Yeah.
You mean like a campaign setting book of dungeons, or like a super dungeon?
Well, no.
Or are you talking more like Emerald Spire?
Or mega dungeon like Emerald Spire.
Okay.
I would love to do a longer adventure like Emerald Spire, and not. I mean, one of the things that is on one hand really awesome about Emerald Spire is we got so many great authors to work on it, and that's also kind of one of its disadvantages because it's kind of got it's all over the place. One of the projects that I would like us to do someday is just a big adventure, and I think a mega dungeon fits that sort of format better than an adventure path or anything else. So I would love to do that. Whether or not we ever do it, I don't know. I mean, that's something that type of product pops up all the time in RPGs. So yeah, it's definitely possible.
Along those sort of lines, can any secrets whatsoever on the Spire of Nex, or just a taste of the Spire of Nex?
The Worldscape comics.
That's what Mona said on the website a couple days ago.
Yeah. Did you read them?
Not in the last.
They're written by Eric Mona.
Hours.
So Eric wrote them as a way to explore some of the stuff going on with the Spire of Nex. So
also, yeah, as mentioned, I may have gotten him to start an outline on a Nex book. Everyone should feel free to bug him about how much they would really like to see a Nex book. So shame is a really good way to get him to finish things.
Yeah,
I've been doing that for several years now on the Spire of Nex. Still hasn't worked.
Well, it's not that it hasn't worked. It's that it's taken a long time.
But, you know, if you all wanted to put a little pressure on him to,
Who are we pressuring again?
Yeah, Eric Mona. Don't tell him I told you that he started the outline. Just be like, gosh, I sure would love a Nex book. I'd buy two copies.
Because he will look at you knowingly and nod and smile and be like, that sure would be great. And
it also helps us, like, I've set aside $40 to buy a Nex book, and I can't spend that money now because there's not a Nex book to spend it on.
I mean, it's just capital locked in stasis, like nobody wants to accept it.
I guess I'll just burn this money.
Wow.
Shame.
Yes.
It's a powerful tool.
Shame.
I did. I was hoping maybe you guys could share some not known secrets of the Darklands, since it's not an area that seems to be very physically visited.
Oh gosh, I mean, I feel like we've done a ton with the Darklands.
But there's a big section of the Darklands in Iron Fang, which isn't out yet, I don't think. Or is it? It's in the yeah. So Iron Fang invasion, the adventure path that is about like hobgoblins, so like it goes into the Darklands. We do Darklands. I mean, we've done Heroes of the Darklands. We've done Darkland Revisited. We've done a lot of stuff. If you're looking for new secrets of the Darklands we haven't talked about yet, there's plenty. I mean, the Darklands is kind of one of my favorite places to tinker with. So I've got all sorts of, again, headcanon type stuff going on in there. There's a little section about the Flume Warrens in an upcoming product, I think, that we just were messing with.
Did you read Inner Sea Races?
No, I have not.
Okay, so there's a big chunk of drow history in there that I don't think exists anywhere else.
The
interesting thing about the Darklands is, like, we squirrel pieces of Darklands history away in a lot of, like, products that may not seem like they're particularly Darklands-focused. So, I don't necessarily feel like there's a ton that we've held back about it, because like we've written a ton of it, but there might be a lot of stuff that you don't know just because it's not in Darklands Revisited or...
Gotcha. So, I would check out the wiki look up Darklands and then start clicking links and pay attention to the sources at the bottom, because they'll tell you what books have Darklands information and what ones don't. And it pops up relatively frequently. but not always in books where it's obvious that it's in it.
And one of my favorite things to do with the Dark Lands is to explore what the ecology is for some of those places, because when you're looking at subterranean creature ecologies, even beyond a world with magic and ta-da, we create food, deal with it, you can create some awesome geological features. Like one of the vaults of Orb is called the Crystal Womb, which is just, hey, can you imagine anything in mineralogy? Bam, it's there. And so that's been a really fun place to experiment with in adventures.
And that's actually, now you mentioned that, the whole the Darklands on Galarian exist because of the Vault Keepers and the Vault Builders, this race of elemental-themed creatures that kind of use that underground areas like a terrariums, and they use their magic to make it habitable, otherwise science would make everything die.
Okay.
And the Vault Keepers are, that whole element is a big part of the Iron Fang Invasion adventure path. Okay. So there's, although only one, you only go to the Darklands in one adventure, there's Darklands information kind of scrolled away throughout all of this, particularly in, I think, Parts 4 and 6.
Sounds right.
You?
There was an awesome undead dwarf monster at the end of Crown of the Kobold King. I don't think it ever got updated. Can we say that again? I don't remember what it was called.
Words burned. Yeah, I was just looking at that a couple days ago.
So we have update the 3.5 modules to Pathfinder on our list of to-do items. It's been there for as long as I've been at Paizo. It's not that someday when we have world enough in time, but not anytime soon, because we just started a whole second game that we're producing content for now.
We just did Bestiary 6, and one of the things I did there is I went through a lot of our old stuff, and it's like, I want to pick out a few monsters that we've never updated. Like, the Cutlass Spider is in there, and there's a couple more things that we just never updated, so it's potential at some point. There are certain monsters we've produced before that we are, like, embarrassed by, and I'm not going to call them out because it's not cool to make fun of them, but there are some monsters that the creative director wants to have forgot.
Fire Cancer?
Fire Cancer. They got
Fire
Cancer.
The
Forge Burn is not one of them. That's one of the more interesting kind of things. That beard made of smoke, and he's wrapped up in a thing. He's pretty cool. We haven't got a spot for him yet.
Time for maybe one or two other questions. Anybody who has not had one asked?
Just a quick question. You just came out with the Planes of Power recently.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans to go on other planes and expand on that?
Would you like that?
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you want to hear more about planes and stuff like that.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
You have sympathetic ears on the panel.
Yes.
Awesome. And then thank you.
If there on the panel, if there was a particular time in Galarian that you could explore, do a path or something like that, you know, with all the ancient cultures and whatnot, would there be one that you would be interested in creating a story around? Your favorite. I was not expecting that reaction from you.
So I don't know if you know, but John has an archaeology background.
Yes, absolutely. I would love to be able to look at any number of the great historical events in Galarian's, 10,000 plus year, but even more than that, timeline, and allow people to do adventures there. I would love to be able to have a Quest for Sky adventure. I would love to be able to show what it's like to be part of one of the armies of exploration. I'd love to have an adventure where you get to be some of the magic warriors of Jitembe and help shape the restoration of magic to Grund and beyond. Yes, there are many. Also, I would love to be able to look at some of the regions where, like, we have several regions where there are ancient kingdoms and societies where it's like, oh yeah, we have, like, Jiska and Tekrutanan League and ancient Osirian all covering northern Garand. We have tons of stuff there. And then, off in northeastern Avastan, we have barbarians for 8,000 years. What were they doing? Barbarian! I'd love to be able to explore some of the minor kingdoms or fealties or whatever that were in that area and say, because when you look at real-world societies, you're like, oh yeah, we might not have much archaeological record of these people, but they were still there. They were still doing significant things. Let's learn more about them other than they rode mammoths.
It's a really tricky topic to do, though, because if for example, we wanted to set something way back in say, Thessalonian times, It's a new campaign setting to a certain extent, because you can't have dwarves because they're still underground. You can't worship Caden Kaelin because he hasn't been born yet. Nobody knows who Aridin is. Well, they would know who Aridin is because he's old. But it's a different campaign setting. And as interesting and fascinating as it is, the format in which we present that information has to be like in a way that works. And there's a lot of, like, in order to tell you this story, I have to tell you that story. In order to tell you that story, I have to give you this 5,000-page book and all that. And nonetheless, I think
some of us would read that book.
I'm pretty sure some of us, as in all of us on this panel in particular, would write that book. So
there's a 42-page history of Casmeron as a background for Kadira, because of course I did, because I'm obsessive and broken. I posted part of it in one of the threads. It's either the Kadira product thread or it's the comment threads for one of the two blogs on it. Behind a spoiler tag, I have posted one of the faux academic articles about the history of Casmeron.
Because
of course I did. you can find that, and it's got some of the ancient history, and, like, yes, I would love to do more with that, because the ancient Near East is great, and we need more of it in our setting.
And one of the most delightful things is to write history for a fictional setting from the perspective of a fictional person.
Yep. It has footnotes and everything.
We can answer one more question really quickly, and then we're done.
Is there a plan to do a special edition for Second Darkness like you guys did for Curse and Rise?
There is no plan to do that right now, but I would love to do it.
Well, wait, a follow-up on that. The hardcover collection is, like, redoing all of those. Take the Adventure Pass and, like, flush them out and expand them like you've done for the first two.
Those are not as easy as you can make them.
First of the Crimson Throne and Rise of the Rune Lords are third and fourth largest books we've ever published. No, right now, since Starfinder's not up, they're the second and third largest books we've ever published. Just the sheer space they take up in a warehouse, that's significant.
You're hurting her. You don't roll her.
What Jessica's trying to say is it would be great.
Yeah.
Now has like 3 weeks less.
The amazing is so in the history books.
We can't do everything, but we will do what we can.
Let me introduce you to the concept of opportunity cost.
If Second Darkness sells out, if the last few volumes in the warehouse sell out pretty, you know.
Oh, that's part of the problem. There's not a few volumes left in the warehouse.
There's thousands.
So when we did Rise of the Rune Lords, we were really paranoid about everything because we didn't even know if we were going to have a job long enough to finish the adventure path.
And Lisa made a commitment that she would publish all 6 volumes, no matter what.
And that was huge. And that happened, and then we moved on to do Curse of the Crimson Throne. And by the time we were mostly done with Curse of the Crimson Throne was when we first started realizing Rise of the Rune Lords was actually successful. It took a year for us to hear that. And at that point, we're like, we might actually be onto something. Great. And then we ran out of copies for a lot of Crimson Throne and Curse of the Rise of the Rune Lords. So let's print a bazillion copies of Second Darkness, and we overestimated it. And so we've got a lot of
those. You can't really do a new one until you get rid of
it. Oh, we could, but it would be...
it would invalidate all
the stock. The thing with Rune Lords is, if you want to buy the original printing of Rune Lords on eBay, it's, like, super expensive now, because, like, people want that original edition.
I'm a Charter subscriber. I got mine.
Yeah, okay. There's not that kind of demand for Second Darkness?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you want to see it, Second Darkness hardback, start buying.
But that's not even going to be, because it takes basically several people, like a year, to produce one of these books. And we produce twice as many of those adventure paths every year. So even if we were to do every adventure path we ever did, we would always, at best case scenario, be halfway behind. Caught up. So it's basically, unless we stop printing adventure paths, we can't print.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's not easy
to wrap things up.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad.
find more great Pathfinder audio, go to No Direction Podcast.